Hey, hey, we're your hosts.
I'm Charlotte.
And I'm Jonathan.
And we believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give to yourself is the gift of wholeness through integrating all aspects of what it means to be human.
And in this podcast, we're bringing you insight, information, and inspiration to move from a stressful to stress-free life.
Your journey to becoming even healthier and happier starts right now.
Welcome to Wellness Theory, the podcast.
So welcome. Thank you everyone for tuning in. On today's show, we have joining us Angela Foster, who is a nutritionist, health and performance coach, and host of the top rated podcast, High Performance Health. Now, as a former partner in a large law firm, Angela is no stranger to the demands of long working hours and a high pressure environment. Angela left the world of corporate law after a serious illness in 2014 and used integrative health practices and biohacking to rebuild her physical and mental health. Angela has developed a unique methodology to help high achievers shift into optimal health for sustained high performance. Now, through her coaching programs and online membership, the Female Biohacker Collective, Angela's mission is to educate and inspire people to become the CEO of their health and live a vibrant, happy, and healthy, limitless life. Now, welcome to the show, Angela. It is really great to have you here. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's really lovely to be here. Thank you.
I'm super excited to have this conversation because we've been looking for a while for somebody with the expertise to dive into some of the topics we're going to dive into today. Because obviously, from our standpoint, we help our clients in many, many different ways. But going deep into female health is a huge part of the puzzle, and it's a lot of struggles, and there's not enough people really speaking about it with the appropriate experience and credentials to do so. So before we dive in to some of those bigger topics, it'd be awesome for you, Angela, to just share a bit more from your own standpoint. How do you describe yourself? Because these bios can get a little bit kind of samey in terms of like titles and whatnot, but how do you describe yourself and what's led you to where you are now?
So my biggest thing really is about female empowerment. That's really where my focus and my mission in life is. I think because, as you were saying there isn't enough focus or attention paid to women. I think the society has been predicated around the circadian clock, which works really super well for men. But we, as you know, have this second infradian rhythm. And I think within that, both for men and women, there are also nuances around ultradian rhythms and different cycles. And that's really why I've kind of developed this concept of biosyncing, so that it goes a little bit beyond, I guess it's biohacking with a feminine touch is the way I like to think of it. More in touch with our feminine side and just understanding those rhythms, but also through transition, because, you know, many women, obviously, in fact, all women will eventually hit menopause and things change there. And in the lead up, there are changes, just as there are changes that young girls have to take account of in puberty and causes disruption. And I think that for many women listening to this, they probably really, you know, identify with that, because you go through puberty and then you spend, you know, a pretty good few years. Most women, if they're progressing on the career ladder, trying not to get pregnant, right? That's the first thing. It's like, how can I not get pregnant right now? And then you go through, you know, the transition of getting really healthy for pregnancy. So there's all fertility, and then there is during pregnancy, and then postpartum. And you have that cycle a few times, depending on how many children you have. You just kind of hit an even keel, and now you're into perimenopause. And so actually, you know, I think the Japanese call menopause, they don't even have the word menopause. It is the second spring. And it's really just a really beautiful part of a woman's life that you can embrace, because she's now raised her children and it's kind of new beginnings. And I love that analogy, because I think for the previous kind of 30, 40 years, we're seeing significant different disruptions. And what I want to teach women is how to avoid that and really embrace that rhythm. And the reason for that really is because I started out life in the corporate world, not literally, but my adult life, as a corporate lawyer. And so I worked hugely long hours, many weekends, pulling off regular all-nighters, not paying attention to the circadian rhythm, not really paying attention to my infradian rhythm, because, you know, it was a very masculine environment. And regardless of how I felt, it was kind of show up and perform the same day in, day out. And that was really despite having my own set of hormonal issues from PCOS and endometriosis. And then eventually, once I had my children, really battling postnatal depression consecutively, you know, with each child, it got progressively worse until I really just was flawed mentally and physically. And I got pneumonia, but that then progressed to quite an advanced stage where my lymph glands were so sort of swollen that they thought I had potentially had lung cancer. So I was having investigations and CT scans. And it just turned out that actually the pneumonia had progressed so much and was beginning to cause lung damage. And that was a huge turning point in my life because, you know, I was having scans at the hospital and told, you can't go home. We're admitting you immediately because it's got to such a progressed state. I couldn't go and pick the kids up from school. And it was a really, really defining moment. And I kind of had what I would say is a spontaneous healing moment in hospital because I was neutropenic. They thought they were going to have to intubate me. For anyone listening, neutropenic is where your white blood cell count goes super, super low. And so it, you know, it was viral and bacterial pneumonia on both lungs. So we needed a bit of help from my own body really to fight that infection. And it was at a point in my life where I was so depressed. It had been predicated by lots of treatment and kind of suicidal thoughts. And really just, I think it was actually the fevers that kind of gave way to this sort of lucidity where I felt this sense of peace and connection with myself. And there's nowhere to run, right? When you're in hospital, where are you going to go? I couldn't run away from myself anymore. And so I decided, you know, like, what am I doing? How am I here? Why do I keep thinking about suicide? I've got three children. They need a mum to see them grow up. And it just completely changed my approach. And I wouldn't say that coming out of hospital, it was automatically easy. It wasn't. It's taken years of work of optimizing my mental and physical spiritual health and then completely retraining. You know, at first it was, I guess, a selfish enterprise of how can I get back on track for myself and for my family. And then as I retrained, it grew into something bigger. And now I just am absolutely passionate about helping women become their best selves and really live their best lives because I think it has such a ripple effect in the world.
100%. God, there's so much there to unpack.
It's a bit of a long intro, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's perfect because there's so many elements of your story that I'm sure individuals can relate to, and there'll be some listeners that can perhaps relate to the whole journey and some of those struggles that you would have faced. So I mean, from my standpoint, it was like similar to you, very much male dominant environment, perform like everybody else, like fitness wise, not only kind of in the kind of performance arena in like the corporate space as well. And it was tough because I had no idea I even had an infradian rhythm. So I know a lot of our listeners as well might also kind of be in that space. So could you perhaps start there with anybody that this is all new for? Because actually a lot of the studies over the years have been predominantly around men, right? And it was news to me finding out, whoa, I actually had no idea that that was the case. And that was when I started to hack my own health from this standpoint as well. And that changed the game for me, and my performance has skyrocketed ever since in all areas. So I'd love for you to just kind of dive in to perhaps the infradian rhythm, or even if you think there's a place that people need to start before there, that'd be amazing.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. And I love what you mentioned there about your performance skyrocketing, because I think a lot of people initially, they think, well, I don't have time. I'm going to focus on my health later, or I'll just get through this stage, you know, whether particularly for people in very stressful jobs that are demanding, or they've got a lot going on in their home life. And I think that you can then get to the point where you perpetually put it off until you have a health issue. Yeah. And that's what I'm keen to involve. And I think And I think if people understand that there is a smarter way of organizing things around the infradian rhythm, which I'll explain, actually it becomes more appealing. But if we sort of track back, I think women have, right from school, you're sort of led to believe that your period is this thing that you've just got to deal with, and it's a bit of a pain. And yes, you might get some cravings, you may get menstrual cramps, you may even get migraines, you may feel really irritable and in a bad mood, and that's just kind of the way it is. And I think there's a conditioning. And so many of the women that I see initially, they say to me, I'm actually only having 2 good weeks a month. It gets to the point of it being that bad that now 50% of their year effectively is good and 50% isn't so good. And I think that's a real shame. And I think if we look at it a different way, your menstrual cycle is actually a gift. So every single month that bleed shows up, it is a gift because it's an opportunity to look at your health. It shows you how healthy your body is. And if you're experiencing, you know, things like I did with endometriosis and PCOS, where it looks like something out of a Quentin Tarantino movie, then it isn't healthy, you know, like you. And I think you just, these things grow over time and you don't realize that what you're seeing and that severe cramping isn't how it should be, because the thing with health issues is they just get progressively worse each time, just a little bit worse, a little bit worse, a little bit worse. So you're not measuring, you know, you don't wake up with a really healthy menstrual cycle one day and then you've got rampant endometriosis the next. It comes over years, and I think you don't notice. So I think understanding, first of all, what's normal and what isn't, as opposed to what's common and what isn't, because they're not the same thing. And then also embracing it as a gift. It's the thing that allows you to effectively create another tiny human. And that is a wonderful, wonderful gift that we as women have. And I think we should really embrace that. And so the infradian rhythm is really the rhythm of the menstrual cycle. That is 28 days. So obviously the circadian rhythm, for people thinking, what's the difference between infradian, circadian, ultradian? What the hell is she talking about? Basically, infradian rhythm is your menstrual cycle, and it's around 28 days each month. For some people, it's going to be longer, for some people, a little bit shorter. But if you have a regular cycle, it's going to be thereabouts. The circadian rhythm is obviously the 24-hour clock, which is based around the sun. And that works super well for men. Like organizing your day and your sleeping, your lifestyle and everything around that is brilliant. Whereas women seem to be aligned with the moon to a degree. And the moon follows a similar cycle, right? It's an infradian rhythm. So that's the first thing. Ultradian rhythms are shorter. And actually for both men and women, we can look at them in this concept of biosyncing. And ultradian rhythms are generally around 90 minutes or less. And we see that when we look at sleep. So we see that you'll go through around approximately 90-minute sleep cycles. During the day when you're concentrating, if you really want to maintain hyper focus and productivity, probably can maintain that for about 90 minutes before the brain begins to tire and we see sort of a law of diminishing returns unless we recover. And I think it's really important to align with these things. But with the menstrual cycle, we can split it out into sort of four distinct phases, really. So we, first of all, at the beginning of the month on day one, that is menstruation. And this is when for women listening, and for men, actually, if they want to learn more about it, this is when you are most like a man, because all of your hormones have dropped to their lowest level. And yes, sometimes you can feel that if you haven't got a sort of healthy cycle yet, or healthy rhythm, that you've got really bad pain or low on energy. But over time, I would hope that if you take account of some of these things I'm going to suggest, that really starts to improve for you. So that first menstrual phase basically can last anywhere between 3 days and 7 days would be normal. If you're bleeding beyond 7 days, you should be really looking into why that's happening. But all the hormone levels have dropped, and actually energy is pretty high here. So there are things that we can talk about in terms of like physical fitness. I know you guys are into that, that you can do around the menstrual cycle. But in terms of nutrition, you really want to be rebuilding things. So iron is very, very important mineral. For women who have heavy bleeding, ferritin levels, which is your iron stores, can drop quite dramatically over time. And the issue with that is that unfortunately it becomes a virtuous circle. So iron deficiency causes heavy bleeding, which seems crazy because you think if I'm bleeding heavily and I'm losing iron, why would that now cause more heavy bleeding? But it just does. So you want to correct that, and you're not going to feel high on energy and really well. And so eating foods that contain iron, obviously we always think automatically to things like red meat, which is great if you are eating meat. It's a very bioavailable form of what's known as heme iron, can be helpful. But as we move out of menstruation, and we can come back to the fitness in a moment, this is all part of the follicular phase. So menstruation is phase one of the follicular phase. This is where we're developing the new follicle for the new month. And then in that second week, our hormone levels start to rise. And specifically at this point, estrogen is really rising. But we can feel a lot more open. So in terms of our creativity and our flow, in a menstruation, we tend to go inwards a little bit more and be introspective, but also really kind of understanding ourselves. And if you're sort of mission driven, for those people listening that are entrepreneurs, for example, and quite creative, this is a really good time to be brainstorming and coming up with ideas and connecting with yourself and what you want to do. And then in that second week, we become a lot more outward facing as we move up towards ovulation. We are generally better at recovering from our workouts and things, so we can hit it harder. We can come back to that. And this all leads up to ovulation. And then ovulation happens in the middle of the month, around day 14, 15 on a 28-day cycle. You get a big surge of luteinizing hormone. And when the egg pops out, there is a temporary gland left behind called the corpus luteum. And that is what produces progesterone, or the bulk of progesterone. Some is picked up by the adrenals. And that's why high stress can limit progesterone production. But if we have a really good, healthy corpus luteum, then that will help to keep progesterone levels high. So estrogen has been really busy building the endometrial lining, ready to support a pregnancy. And then if we don't have a pregnancy at the end of the month, obviously we will have a menstrual bleed as the hormone levels start to drop. But progesterone is very, very important for helping keep that lining in place, but also moderating the thickening effects of estrogen. So if we don't have enough progesterone, we can see heavy bleeding. We can see a lot of the menstrual symptoms that women are experiencing. It also, without enough progesterone, you can be more prone to things like PMS symptoms, more prone to anxiety, which is very common for women as they go through perimenopause. And so that phase at the end is known as the luteal phase. And I like to, I don't want to say, some people will sort of really segment this, that week by week or a day, a week by week, you're a different woman. I think it's a bit more fluid than that.
Yeah.
But I think generally, so I can't say, right, now you can do a HIIT workout, now you can't do a HIIT workout. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a little bit more fluid than that. And I think women will resonate with that because you're obviously nodding, that you feel slightly different, but it's all on a continuum. And so as we move deeper into the luteal phase and progesterone production is peaking kind of between days 19 and 21, we want to optimize for that. We don't want to be overly stressing ourselves out. And this is a great time, you know, in terms of work for really closing out projects, actually making sure that you finish what you've started. And then you're going to get a fresh start. I like the analogy of a fresh start effectively at the beginning of each month. So hopefully that kind of gives a bit of an overview of how it works.
It definitely does. It definitely does. It's interesting. As you were describing that as well, obviously, I'm kind of just thinking about myself at the same time. And I'm sure our listeners will be as well of their own cycle and what that looks like. And for me, like, I have obviously my favourite phases, as it were. Like, so that was especially in the beginning. Now it's, I actually have learned to welcome different phases and to be more fluid with them. When I first started learning about this, it's like, right, okay, this phase is supposed to be this long, this phase is supposed to be this long, this phase is supposed to be this long. And I was kind of just observing and monitoring it just to see how healthy it was, because fortunately I've not had much issues at all when it comes to my cycle. Very grateful for that, because I know that can actually be rare these days. But the thing that I found the most helpful was when I started to look at the nutritional aspects, not only then the behaviors, but the nutrition, eating in sync with my cycle was really powerful. So it'd be great shortly if you could maybe give us a few tips on specifics, like common things that you come across with certain people and maybe common things that they need. You've already mentioned the iron there as well. Mm. But also the other thing that I really would like to kind of get your thoughts on is the whole psychology of it and how that is impacted. Because for me, I used to get really frustrated that I couldn't like keep up with John in the gym, or I get frustrated if I wasn't as creative one day as another day, and I had no idea why I was able to or not, and that actually really messed with my head like for a long time. And then when I started to learn about this, I was like, oh my god, there's a reason. And that in itself was just a bit of an aha moment to be more connected with myself. And so I'd be curious to know kind of what your experience of that with people that you work with.
Yeah, sure. So if we start with the nutrition, first of all, I think one of the biggest things I say is I am not an advocate of any particular diet at all. And I think that you've got to find out what nutritionally works for you. And I always look at people's genetics, because I think we'd have different levels of carbohydrate tolerance and tolerance of fat, saturated fats, for example. And I think it's really important to look at that. I'm not an advocate of any kind of restricted diet. And I personally would classify the ketogenic diet as part of that. Yep. And I think it sees results because it is a form of restriction, just like super low carb is. Yep. What I like to do is really to encourage women to eat as minimally processed as possible and embrace the way we would have eaten previously from an ancestral perspective. And for me, that does include meat and fish. I think that there are, from a neurological perspective and from a muscle protein synthesis perspective, really big benefits from eating animal-based protein. But what I would say is I do think as women, we need to embrace a lot of plant foods and diversity. And that's really important for supporting hormonal health. Because when we look at estrogen, and there's a test that I commonly do with clients known as the Dutch test, and we can see on that test the pathways that estrogen is going down. So how is that woman processing estrogen? And there are three main pathways. There's the 2OH, the 4OH, and the 16OH. And these pathways matter, because the 16OH pathway, we want to see a certain amount going down there because it supports things like bone density, but it can also proliferate growth. So things like fibroids, for example, can be proliferated if you've got too much 16OH. The 4OH pathway is where DNA damage can occur. So we produce these things called quinones. So it's quite important that only a certain amount is going down that 4-OH pathway. We want to see most of it going down the 2-OH pathway. Now, if things are going down and we see them down the 4-OH pathway, the next thing to think about is, well, is it being methylated properly? Okay, so are we limiting that DNA damage? And again, you can see that methylation index on that test. So it's a super useful test alongside looking at levels of E1, E2, and E3. And E2 is the main form, estradiol is the main form of estrogen for women in their cycling years. And it's also the most potent form of estrogen. Now, a lot of women hear about things like DIM and they say, oh, I should take DIM and, you know, that helps. Well, in actual fact, it will help to shift these pathways if you've got a lot going down the 4-OH, but it also has an overall lowering effect of estrogen. So for some women, that can start to induce things like hot flashes and things, particularly if they're in their 40s and getting towards, you know, in those perimenopausal years. So I think always actually test. That's always my thing. Test and guess. Same with your nutrition. With genetics, you only got to look at it once and just, you don't need to keep retesting, but understand, because don't go and eat a kind of high saturated fat version of the ketogenic diet if you're really sensitive to fats on your genetics, because this could be, you know, not a very good thing for you in terms of longevity. But beyond that, what we do know is that by eating lots of plant-based foods, we're going to be helping the health of our microbiome. And that's really, really important when we look at estrogen detoxification, because our liver's going to do, we want a really healthy liver as well. And our liver will do a lot of the work and it will package it up, but then it's got to be excreted. And it goes over to the gut most of the time to be excreted. And there are bacteria who produce something known as beta-glucuronidase. And this regulates estrogen levels within the body as well. And if beta-glucuronidase levels are too high, it basically opens up the envelope. And now we get repackaged estrogen coming into the system. And that is more damaging and can cause more symptoms and chaos. So we want to have a healthy gut microbiome. And the way to do that is to eat a diverse range of plants that are really colorful varieties, really rich in polyphenols, because those polyphenols feed our healthy gut bacteria. So that's really important. If we have any parasites or anything that we need to resolve, get really good gut testing with a clinician and get those sorted out. The other thing is to bear in mind is eating cruciferous vegetables is really important to help detoxify estrogen, because that supports the liver. They have high levels of sulfur and also the allium family. So here we're talking about things like broccoli, kale, to a degree, don't overdo the kale, but broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, things like that. And then also the allium family, onions, leeks, and garlic. So those are really important. And what I'll see on people's DNA tests is often they actually have some SNPs that are deleted, they're missing. And these cruciferous vegetables and allium family can help to support that and make up for the deficits that's not being produced. So that's the key thing to get, is make sure you're getting really good plants, cruciferous vegetables, sulfur-based foods. This is going to help with estrogen detoxification, which is going to minimize symptoms. You can also include things like, for example, seed cycling. It's not that this is well supported in the scientific literature, it just works in practice. So many women feel better when they include things like flaxseed and pumpkin seeds in the first half of the month, and then they move to sesame and sunflower in the second. And I've had women, you know, on my Instagram go, oh my god, that seed cycling post has just changed my life within a short period of time. And you know, you might be thinking, listening and thinking, how quickly can I change the outcomes? Well, the life cycle of the egg is around 100 days, so within 3 months, by Christmas, you could be in a very different position than you are now if you start optimizing around your menstrual cycle. So that's kind of nutritionally the things I would say. The other thing to point out is that you're going to have better carb tolerance actually in the luteal phase. So this is post-ovulation, less carbs needed. Funnily enough, even though you're stronger, and I'll come on to the fitness side in a second. So those cravings that you get, actually your metabolic rate is a little bit faster. So in that last sort of week or so, when you're craving all that dark chocolate, or is it just me, you can kind of cut yourself some slack, because you do actually have a bit more calorie flexibility, about another sort of anywhere between kind of 150 to 300 calories extra. So and the thing there is, if you have satiating foods like cacao, so dark chocolate, high fat, actually helps you to have less cravings. Magnesium is really important for women's hormones, like really, really important. Can't overstate that enough. And I think most women benefit from supplementing with magnesium because we're so often deficient in it. Personally, I love, and I'm not saying this to advertise their product, I just love Bioptimizers Magnesium, because everyone I ever recommend it to just is like, oh my God, it's like changed my life. So magnesium is really, really good. So that's kind of from a nutritional perspective. I think you were asking about training as well.
Yeah. Just before we go on to the training and strength, just one more aspect of the nutrition I just want to touch on quickly for people who either will eat meat but also don't eat meat. So the people who eat meat is obviously the type of meat and kind of how it gets farmed is very important because the amount of chemicals are pumped through certain obviously factory farmed meats. So the first question is, what type of meat should people be looking out for? So women should be looking out for when it comes to getting that good quality. And for women who don't eat meat, who are against eating meat, is what's your view on supplementing, like supplementing to get that nutrient? And what is the quality of the supplements versus the meat, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so it's a little bit like when we were talking about iron there. Heme iron is obviously very bioavailable.
Yeah.
I think with the quality of meat, grass-fed, pasture-raised is critical. Mm. Over and above, I would say, you know, if you with organic, if you can afford it, fantastic. But I'd look at what the animal is eating first.
Yeah.
Because you can find, I think, sometimes organic grain-fed meat. Mm. Actually, here in the UK, we're very lucky. Most meat is pretty much grass fed. Mm. However, they're not necessarily grass finished. So if you can get grass finished as well, that's important. Grain is used to fatten up the cow. And the thing with grain is it changes the omega profile quite significantly. And so if you're having too many omega sixes, that is pro-inflammatory in the body in terms of the pathways. We want to have a lot of omega threes. And that obviously can be harder for vegetarians to find, because if you can eat fish, the acronym SMASH is helpful when you're looking at fish, because those are fish that are low in mercury. They're not super large fish that have accumulated a lot of mercury and are high up in the food chain. So that would be sardines, mackerel, anchovies, salmon and herrings. That's what the SMASH acronym is. So that can be helpful. Omega-3 is also very important for limiting pain and prostaglandins that are produced. So actually having high omega-3 can help lessen off things like period pain. It also helps with the serotonin pathway and helping to support positive mood. So in that, when we're talking about this ultradian rhythm, don't forget we still do need to embrace the circadian rhythm, right? We can't just like not go to bed on time and all, just completely ignore sleep hygiene, because I heard a podcast with Angela saying I need to embrace my infradian rhythm. I can stay up all night and party as long as I eat these foods. Not the case at all. It's in addition to the circadian clock, right? So I sort of qualify that. But with omega-3s, they're really important as well. Choline's really important from eggs and things like that, you know, for neurological function. And I think that for people who are vegetarian, they can incorporate some of that. Some people do have intolerances and allergies. So I think if you've got special considerations, you want to work with a practitioner really to help you design your diet. If you are a vegan, for example, then getting an algae-based supplement can be helpful. You can also get omega-3s from flax seeds and walnuts and flaxseed oil and things like that. It's just that what we see from a genetic perspective is the conversion rate can be quite poor in some individuals. And I think also depending on the health of your microbiome, that makes a difference as well. The other thing to mention is I think you're touching on there is protein for people that are vegan or vegetarian. There is some early evidence that, and this will relate nicely into what we're going to talk about with fitness, that actually people who have been on a vegan diet for a very long time, perhaps their microbiome is changing a little bit to be able to produce the essential amino acids, but that's early research. So essential amino acids are all proteins are broken down into amino acids. And there are 8 essential amino acids, which means they're essential because we have to attain them from our diet. We don't make them, just like omega-3 and omega-6 are both essential fatty acids. So sometimes what I'll have with clients who are on a vegetarian diet and they say they've got a really high training load, then they would take essential amino acids, for example, to support that training. Or they take a vegan-based protein powder just to boost their levels up. Because we know that with muscle protein synthesis, once we hit 30 grams of protein, somewhere between 30 and 50, but getting up to 30 and specifically getting enough leucine, which is higher in animal-based foods. So if you're looking at a protein-based supplement that is vegan, just check, have they mixed up different, is it complete protein, something like pea, or have they mixed up different proteins together so that you're hitting that leucine trigger of at least 2.5 to 3 grams of leucine. If your training demands, you know, your training is volumes quite high, it's really extra important. So you can really help, and that will help you with those strength gains in the gym. And then eating more carbs, again, at the end of your cycle is helpful, but actually, and I think we're going to come on to talk about this, lessening off the load at the end of the month is going to be better, because there's evidence showing that we're more catabolic towards the end of that luteal phase. And so going and trying to do a HIIT workout every day of the month is not going to be good.
Shall I learn the hard way?
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of addictive though, isn't it? HIIT workouts, that's the thing, right? It does feel very good. But what's really interesting actually, because one of the things I do think is very healthy, and Dr. Stacey Sims talks about a lot, is sprint interval training, particularly for women in their perimenopausal years when they're losing estrogen. Estrogen is a really good stimulator of muscle mass. So it's really on your side in those earlier cycling years. And as that starts to drop off, we have to provide a stronger stimulus. What's interesting was I was doing an experiment with my Whoop to track, because Whoop's actually got a lot better and a lot more intelligent now in terms of tracking the menstrual cycle and looking at your overall strain. And so I was assessing strain levels on a sprint interval workout that was kept very short. So I'd actually done it post weight training. I was in the follicular phase and a better state of recovery that day. And then I basically went on the treadmill, sprinted all out very short, 15 to 20 seconds, recovered and repeated that 6 times through. And actually the strain score was well below within that phase. I'm going to repeat that, you know, over a series of different weeks to see, but it was interesting to see that actually the strain amount was very low. And I think the thing to think about here, I always say to women, is think about the strain that you're putting through psychological stress, because I find that women actually, that is a much bigger source of stress. Unless you are an athlete, often it's everything that you're taking on, and specifically the thoughts you're thinking, that can sometimes be the biggest form of stress.
Absolutely. So obviously let's go into the training of the strength training side of the infradian rhythm, because then after that we want to really delve deeper into that effect of stress on the infradian rhythm as well, because I think that's from our experience in dealing with clients who kind of dialing in the nutrition, dialing in the training, but still not getting those results, we feel that it comes back to that root cause of chronic stress that is not allowing their body to actually utilize the food they're taking in, or actually their body to recover from the training they're doing. So if we can tap into the training side first, and then we can go into the stress, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So when hormone levels are at their lowest, so we go back to menstruation, let's go back to the beginning again. This is a fantastic time to exercise. A lot of women might be lying in bed at this point listening, going, what the hell, how can you say that? I don't feel like it at all. As you start to optimize more, you should feel better. Now, if in the first day one, day two, maybe that's day three, you're really not feeling it, just get up and move around anyway. It doesn't have to be something super intense, but that movement has been shown to help with any kind of period pain experience, feelings that you're getting. Yeah. As you come out, so that will actually help.
It's so when you come out, just to pause on that moment for a second, because we have a lot of listeners in the Middle East. And actually, when we first moved over to the UAE, probably 9 years ago now, there was a lot of gyms that actually had memberships that would exclude a week for the menstrual phase, because the culture was like, you don't exercise when you're on that phase. And when I moved there, I'm like, what? I was like, because I had no idea. It was super interesting. It's shifted a lot now, and it's definitely, you know, it's definitely becoming more common to exercise during your menstrual phase. But it's something I really want our listeners to hear. It's okay, and actually it's going to help you to have some form of movement. It doesn't have to be, like you said, anything crazy intense, but it's just going to help so much. So if there's anything else you want to add to that, to really reiterate why it helps so much, that'd be amazing.
Well, it doesn't surprise me in a way, because I think when we look back through history, I think women were at first encouraged not to do ski jumping because the belief was their uterus would fall out. So it's kind of, that puts it in perspective, I think. Yeah. But yes, I would, if you're not going to go to the gym, I would pick the last week of the month as opposed to the first week of the month not to. Maybe you feel off in the days leading up to your period and the first day or two of your period. Definitely getting outside, going for a walk, or even if, you know, in Dubai, obviously it's very hot in the UAE, all across the UAE a lot of the time. If you're going to go and walk on a treadmill or something like that, just get your body moving. Go for a swim outside. Yeah. My preference is always outside as much as you can. Yeah. Not the whole day. I know that the sun is intense there. I've been there in August and it's quite overwhelmingly hot.
Why did you pick August?
It's overwhelmingly hot, isn't it? So I completely understand that, you know, it's, but maybe a cool small pool outside is a nice place to be. What I would say is try to get moving. It is going to help you. And then as you come out of that, by sort of day three, at this point, you can begin to really start to hit it hard and you're going to make good strength gains. So I do think that every woman should be lifting heavy weights. And I know that a lot of women are going to go, what? I'm going to get big. I don't want to get big. You're not going to get big. Generally, you can get bigger due to your nutrition, and you can also get smaller due to your nutrition. However, weight training is a very good way to become more compact. Muscle is more compact and dense. So don't be put off by the fact that you might weigh more on the scales. It's actually going to take up less space. And that's what women really like when they train in the right way and around their menstrual cycle and get really good results and they've optimized their nutrition. But remember, at this time, probably need less amounts of carbs than you're going to need at the end of the month when you actually transition a little bit more into recovery. So getting sufficient protein is the easiest way to change your body composition. It is just so easy. And you guys know that, right? I'm sure you use it with a lot of clients. But being careful around how much protein you're having is also key. So I think I had a personal trainer in my gym tell me the other day that he was thinking of giving clients 2 grams of protein per pound of body weight. And I was like, no. Because now we're like, we're operating sort of against longevity here, right? It's just overly stimulating growth if you can even kind of absorb all of that. The threshold, as I said earlier, is about 30 grams. So for women, in an ideal world, and there is controversy around this, but you would pre-fuel before weight training. However, me included, I enjoy exercising in a fasted state. I'm happy to take a little bit of a hit in terms of the gains. I'm not a bodybuilder because I enjoy it. I like the kind of hormetic effects. Exercise induces overall autophagy super well. And when people think about fasting, you're not going to go into a full state of cellular autophagy for at least 24 hours. So that 16-8 fast can be used for different reasons, really. But in terms of going and doing a workout fasted, what I would say is see how you feel, what your recovery is like, track things like your HRV, which you can talk about in relation to stress as well in a moment. But what I would say is don't worry. You don't have to work out in a fasted state to burn fat. That's not really a requirement. You could do a cardio workout in a fat burning zone and burn plenty of fat. I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it is what I'm saying. But there seems to be growing evidence, and Dr. Stacey Sims really leads the charge on this, that actually pre-fueling for women is better. And we're more catabolic in the second phase of the month. I personally take some essential aminos and exercise first thing in the morning. I would find that difficult to do, I think, with any amount of carbs and things, but it's personal preference here. And I'm just sharing kind of the science and the results. But really, in terms of your training, you want to be hitting it hard, doing your strength, your lifts in that first couple of weeks. As you get towards, and also doing some high intensity work is really, really good as well. After ovulation, that's when you want to start dialing things back a little bit. And some women can feel a little bit meh after ovulation. That really varies because there is a kind of drop off in estrogen. That's very individual. And hopefully over time that should ameliorate with the right strategies here that we're talking about. But then you slowly sort of lessen off your training and move more into steady state cardio. And in terms of movement patterns and things, that last week's a great week to have deload, to do all the functional training that you don't do, injury prevention work, and just lessen off. So that's kind of how, but I tend to do it on a more fluid basis and also go with how I feel. Often the wearable data that you're looking at, if you're tracking with something like an Aura, they're looking at comparing your luteal phase against your follicular phase. So they haven't necessarily, not necessarily looking at, oh, this is your luteal phase now. Do you look under recovered to last month's luteal phase? So you may look a little bit less recovered than you actually are, but just be aware that if you try and push across the month, what the evidence is showing is it can be more catabolic. So now you're undoing many of the gains that you've got. I don't take a strict analysis. I know some people look at that and say, right, well, you can strength train, do HIIT on this week and then not on this. I think that would be difficult, wouldn't it, to get really good results with a concept like progressive overload. And as I say, and we're going to come on to talk about stress, I think it's important to look at the overall load that's on you And how well you're sleeping and how well you're recovering, and just really dive into that data. So use a journal, use a wearable, and start to look for patterns and see how well recovered you are, and look at the results you're getting. Are you progressing in your lifts month on month? Are you able to lift heavier weights? That's a really good indicator of whether it's working for you. Are you gaining weight around your abdominal area and putting on fat around your abdomen and your hips? If you are, you're probably not managing your blood glucose or your cortisol particularly well, or both. And if you're not managing cortisol, you won't be managing blood glucose well either. Yeah. And pretty much vice versa. So I would look at those things as well.
Perfect.
Awesome. So I think what I would love to really delve into now is that connection of stress and the infradian rhythm. Because like I said before, is one thing, I was obviously a personal trainer for the first 10 years of my career, and I heard nothing about infradian rhythm. Like, it didn't come up in any qualification I did, any learnings I did. So when I was training women, I trained them the same as men. Mm-hmm. And I would come across, again, big barriers when training women when it comes to nutrition. So look at nutrition training and go, why aren't they getting results? It's like they're eating healthy, or quote unquote healthy, based on what kind of I was doing with men. But they weren't getting the results after all. They were getting them, but weren't keeping them. So one thing that I realized when starting to understand the infradian rhythm and understand, obviously, our physiology is stress, especially chronic stress, becomes a big player when it comes to people's results, whether it's physical results, mental, emotional, whatever that is for them. And I think when we look at nutrition and training as the first change in whatever we're experiencing, instead of taking that a step back and looking at, okay, what's happening with our stress, with our stress levels, because stress is health, it's good and bad, it's healthy and unhealthy, but we need stress to grow and adapt, to become stronger, to become fitter, to lose weight, all that stuff. But when it becomes chronic and it becomes kind of unhealthy, it can hinder the body's ability to digest food and to absorb nutrients into the body. It can also obviously affect the body's ability to recover effectively, which leads to compounding stress for the next time we hit the gym or whatever that is that we do. So we'd love to take this into that stress environment now and get your opinion on how stress really affects those different phases of the infradian rhythm, but also how it then affects the results we get if someone is eating optimally for their infradian rhythm and they are training in line with their infradian rhythm and are still not getting results. What is the effect stress has on that?
Stress has a huge effect on everything, right? As I say, it really impacts your ability to control your blood sugar. And I think that I'm the same as you. I did a personal training qualification and also specifically for like strength training and strength and conditioning. And nothing was covered. And I did that really just for my own purposes. When I was retraining in everything, I wanted to fully understand. I did nutritional therapy, I did health coaching, and then I did personal training because I wanted to understand the whole mechanics and biomechanics of how everything worked to put it together, because otherwise it didn't feel like I could really fully advise clients. And I think there was no mention of it at all, which is quite interesting.
Scary.
Very scary.
Yeah, it is kind of scary. And that the expectation could be the same. And I think that's often the case. And I look at my daughter, actually, she's 10 now, and I feel like there's an even playing field for her at the moment in sport. The boys haven't yet hit puberty. They're not yet faster and stronger. They are faster, the boys already, but I would say, but there isn't a dramatic difference. But what's going to come for her, obviously, and she's a massive swimmer, she also plays a lot of team sport, is the infradian rhythm will come in. And if the expectation is then that she shows up exactly the same every single day in her training, mm-hmm. that's not going to be the case. And I think we do really need to actually get this education down and help in schools and things. And that's something that's really on my agenda, is to really help educate the people that are giving that training and the students themselves to understand it and embrace the menstrual cycle. But with stress, I think, first of all, what I notice is women take on greater levels of stress often. They worry about things more. They want to get things right more. And this is where that concept of psychological stress comes in. And if you are stressing too much, this is when progesterone can be lower and it gets diverted into cortisol. And again, I come back to the Dutch test because it's such a good test, because we can see what their metabolized cortisol is, what their free cortisol is. How much the body is actually making cortisol available and how much it's really trying to defend and protect itself, and specifically what DHEA looks like. DHEA is an anabolic hormone, and that helps you gain muscle mass, and I think as well, and supports that. So if you've got too high cortisol and DHEA is not matching and keeping up with demands, and it won't forever if you've got too high stress levels for too long, it's going to be catabolic in nature. And I think it is frustrating for women, and their first instinct is, this isn't working for me anymore, I'm going to have to do more. And they often layer on classes, and they don't create, what happens is, because they're not recovering well enough, I see that they're also not providing enough stimulus. So you can, you know, it's not about the length of time you spend. It's about really, really, like if you look at weight training, for example, it's about performing that lift to the peak of intensity, that when you get to the end of that rep range, you don't feel you can lift more. I'm not talking to the point of failure necessarily, because the science doesn't show that you necessarily, as you know, need to go to failure, and we don't want to compromise form. But often because they're tired, they're not giving it their all. And so then they're trying to give more. So it's like, oh, well, I'll do one class back to back with another class, but they're not really giving their full output. And I think it's about training hard and recovering harder and looking at your metrics, because HRV will show you what that overall physical training load is and psychological load that you've got from work stress, from relationship stress, from family stress, everything else that's going on in your life. And then you can track and see, you know, if your HRV is dropping and on something like a route, you're going into the red too much, you're going to have to pick things up, because yes, you can start to overreach to develop. It's like, isn't it? It's like training a muscle. If you overreach a little bit, you're going to make yourself stronger. It's that form of hormesis again, you know, deliberate stress to make yourself more resilient. And we want to develop resilience. You know, I don't want people to think stress is a bad thing. It isn't. Stress is many respects a good thing. In fact, we need stress to have peak performance. The problem with peak performance is then there's a drop, right? We actually want optimal performance, and optimal performance is dictated by recovery. Your muscles grow in recovery, not in the gym. The gym is the stimulus and the tearing down, as you know. The recovery is what builds that. And I think just learning to actually take time out for yourself and recognizing that actually as a woman, if you don't put yourself last, so many of us grew up with mums who did really genuinely put themselves last. And I think actually what we're really learning now is we're under so much more pressure than ever before, because we're raising children and working, which is fantastic. And we want to be doing that, but we've got to prioritize ourselves and give ourselves more recovery, because everyone benefits. And in turn, our children are going to model what we're doing as well.
That recovery piece is essential. And I think that's one of the things I probably missed out at the start of when I said, like, since I've been more attuned to myself in regards to the infradian rhythm, and then syncing that to my training, to my nutrition, to my cognitive function when it comes to work performance as well, it's the recovery that's probably actually played the biggest part, because I was like all or nothing kind of mentality for a long time. And I was like in a corporate environment with like working 80 hours a week minimum, traveling across different countries, which that can be really challenging from a nutrition perspective, from a sleep perspective. So I just got to the point, super burnout, right? Then that, from that burnout space, it then uncovered then some psychological stuff that I hadn't really worked on, that I needed to work on. And then from there, like, the recovery was essential. I actually really had to put the brakes on for a long while before I could really start to pick up performance again. And I know a lot of people listening to this are living busy lives, right? And there's a lot of pressure to be go, 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 go. And actually to just pause right there and just check, like, what is your baseline? What's going on with your HRV? What is going on with just your own connection to your body? How do you feel? Because it's great to have all this data, but unfortunately, I think we can go one way or the other with it. It's like, it's too overwhelming, so people don't look at it because they don't understand it, or they just look at it and go too far into it without tapping into their own intuition and how their body feels. So I love that you touched on that earlier. What I'd love for you to perhaps just share is, where does somebody start? Because somebody listening to this that may be new to it all might be feeling a bit overwhelmed right now. Where would you say their best starting point is? And I would imagine this is where your kind of shift methodology comes into play as well. So I'd love for you to share more about that.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So the shift I developed really to give people a framework, because I think, as you say, they find it difficult. Where do I start? And also, where do I go to? And sometimes you might want to implement shift in different ways, right? So shift essentially stands for sleep is the S, H is hormones and neurotransmitters, because they basically control how we feel and operate. And then the I is insight. So that's collecting your data. And that's kind of the keystone piece in the center, because these other things feed into the insights. And then the insights you get feed back into the way you want to moderate your sleep or your hormones, or as I come on to flow and training. And the flow there really is what I use for fueling your body, because flow stands for food, light, oxygen, and water. Mm-hmm. So we really want to be breathing right. We want to be hydrating right with the right amount of salts and things and minerals. We want to put the right food into our bodies. And we talk quite a lot about that. And then we want to get access to light. It's so important. And we want to restrict light in the evening to stimulate melatonin and get good quality sleep. So that's flow. And then the last bit is the T, and that's training the mind and body. And I genuinely believe you need to train your mind on a daily basis as well. And I think that's the critical difference with high performers, is that they condition their states of mind so much more than the average person. Now, within that, you could look and go, well, where do I start? I would start with sleep. It makes everything easier to fix. And that's why when I started to create Shift, there was a reason I was looking for an acronym that would have sleep as the foundation. If you feel like you've got really good sleep and you want to work on some of the other areas, come back to it, because you might find that then that in turn improves your sleep metrics, because not everyone is sleeping as well as most people are not sleeping as well as they could, I think. And it's really quality over necessarily quantity. But I think you can thread through all of those, right? So you can sort of think, okay, but I wouldn't pick too many at the same time. So it's like, I'm going to start eating lots more plants, for example. Great. Like, we did a plant-based challenge in my membership when I opened it last May. And it was like, can you get 30 plants in across the week? Just 30 different ones and look for the color. It's a great challenge. Everyone enjoyed it. Many people, because they're all biohackers, they were eating 50 plus plants, which is fantastic. And it didn't have to be a full serving, right? Even coffee counts as kind of a quarter or a half a point. So it's like looking at points, looking at diversity. Let's just like make it really easy, and get support, like hang out with other people that want to be healthy. I was having a chat with someone, one of my program members, just yesterday. And she's saying how she really struggles because not everyone is doing that. And then they want you to do things like come and have a glass of wine. And you're like, no, I'm not drinking. Well, why are you not drinking? It's like, you don't have to justify why you're not drinking. If you don't want to be drinking, or you do want to have the other drink, fantastic. I would be flexible in your approach, but get these things right and nail them for 80 to 90% of the time. Because if you do that, it's going to make a massive, massive difference to your health and life and your performance, right? So from my perspective, it's like, how can we optimize health for longevity in business and life? And business really is whatever your vocation is, because we want longevity in both. And so I would say you can use that model and get stuck in anywhere. If you want to kind of have a check, like, where am I on these? I have a really simple questionnaire you can do. It's like a health check, and we'll send you a free personalized report that you can download, and it will give you percentage scores in each area of Shift with recommendations you can get started on. It's completely free. And that's at yourtotalhealthcheck.com. So for anyone listening, you can head over there and just categorize and score themselves. But what I would say is, be kind to yourself. It's a journey. It's not a destination, because the thing about this is, when are you ever going to be too healthy? You're not going to turn around one day and go, oh my God, I've just got so healthy. I've just got to really stop this. You know? It's a continuum, and it's a journey, and the health of your mind and your body and your spirit really counts. That's where I, fell down. I hadn't optimized those things, but just be gentle, be patient. Anything you do that can improve your health is a win. And I'm a huge fan of, journaling daily on gratitude and wins, because you want to condition this positivity. It's really important.
Well, we'll definitely put the link to that quiz in the show notes so people can easily find it and use that as their entry point, their starting point to the Shift model as well. So anyone listening, head over, check the notes out, click on the link, take the quiz. I want to take the quiz now as well. I want to see where I am.
See what your scores are.
Exactly.
It was interesting, actually. We've had over 18,000 people take that quiz now. Wow. A lot of people have taken it, and just the thing is just so many women reporting that they just have low mood or low energy so much of the time. and also have a weight around their abdominal area that they just can't seem to shift. And I know you raised that earlier. And what I would say is that concept of stress is so important. I often use, like, there's a device, I don't know if you guys have used it, called Lumen. This one,
yeah.
Yes.
The Lumen device, yep. And you track your respiratory ratio. And I have women come to me and they're like, why is it I'm always in carb burning mode? I'm doing intermittent fasting. I'm doing keto. How on earth am I burning carbs? Because your liver's making that glucose. Because you're so stressed, we just need to, like, dial things back and calm, yeah. And just chill out and just take life one step at a time. And it all starts to kind of right itself. So yeah, be patient, be gentle, hold yourself to the higher standards, but that doesn't need to be perfect.
Okay, so just before we start to wrap up, what's your number one stress relief hack? Is it something that if someone is experiencing stress, what would you advise them to do?
The first thing I would say is, on this situation, is not to try and use the mind to control the body. I would work the other way around. I would use the body to implement the state of mind that you want. And the quickest scientifically proven way to do that is through your breath.
Yeah.
Yep. Love breath work. Absolutely.
It's like the golden answer, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. It's the golden answer. Yeah. Breath is the easiest way to change your state. Yeah. Absolutely.
Beautiful. Angela, thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, you've already shared so much. Is there anything else that you feel like our listeners need to know? Is there anything else that is just burning and dying to share?
No, I think actually you'd cover it. I think the only thing I would say is, you know, don't go for perfection. Just go for daily improvement, right? Try and get 1% healthier every single day and you'll be on a really good continuum.
Exactly.
Awesome. Beautiful. Yeah, so anyone listening, we'll put all the links to where you can find Angela, her quiz, everything in the show notes, so you can easily enter her ecosystem and basically find out what she does. So just head over there, click on everything and start to digest all that information.
Amazing. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
Then share it with a friend who you think might benefit.
Spread the word. That's how we're going to impact the world, by helping each other.
We appreciate you so much, and as always, unconditional love and wellness to you.